welcome to Hearts and Minds. This is Siobhan Scullion and I'm here with Maura Cassidy. And today we are going to talk about, well, I'm going to ask you the question, really, how to own your decision and find inner peace.
Very, really big question.
That's a big question.
And
sorry,
I'm not
Maura.
Sure, Siobhan, I'm going to be able to answer, but I'll have a go at it, okay? We actually had this topic in a recent Hearts and Minds event, so I am a little prepared.
Well, that's good. Good.
That's a sneaky spoiler alert. So I suppose you could say, what if instead of having to live your one life, one day at a time, you could sample every life you could possibly have?
Yeah.
Would you be happier?
That's the
question. Would you find the one, the life in which everything fits? And I think that's really the question, really, is that we're often thinking, what ifs?
Yeah.
You know? And I like to think there's a great book out. It's a bestseller. Many of you probably read it. It's The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
Yeah.
And he asks all these really big questions because, of course, the book follows Nora Seed. And she's a bit, I love the name Seed.
Anyway, it's a great name. I can tell that you loved it by the way you said it.
It's kind of like, well, it's not exactly, it's not a flamboyant name.
Yeah. Seed.
It's kind of diminishes her. But anyway, she's a British woman in her 30s who's deeply depressed. And then one night she decides to commit suicide. She overdoses on sleeping pills. She's sent into a library between life and death.
Mm.
And she's given the chance to undo her regrets by trying out the possible lives that she never took. So she could have been an Olympian swimmer. She could have emigrated to Australia with her best friend. She could have married. She could have done so many things.
Yeah, so all the things.
All the things that she didn't do. And she's given the option to start right where her alternate self would have been on the night she ended her life.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives hundreds of lives, hundreds of versions of herself, some she'd never thought about or even fathomed.
Mm-hmm.
But she's faced with a difficult decision really at the end of the day
because
the decision never goes away, does it?
Mm.
She must decide what she's willing to sacrifice to live permanently in one of these ideal lives.
Okay.
Because everything seems perfect. But as she realizes, there are really new sets of challenges everywhere.
Yeah.
And her exploration of herself leads her to discern what's really important in life.
Mm.
Spoiler alert for decision making.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you could live millions of lives and still not be satisfied.
Yeah.
Because your best life may still not be the right one for you to go through.
Yeah. There's no perfect life.
There's no perfect life. And it all boils down to a lot to do with what's really important to you.
Mm.
And a bit like Nora Seed, I suppose, the danger is with our lives is that we can live our life in the rearview mirror, as it were, with regrets and what ifs, not living in the present moment.
Yeah.
And either not wanting to close off certain decisions because we're afraid that will limit our options and so not making decisions. But of course, you always make decisions by default because they'll be made for you anyway.
Yeah. And not making a decision is making a decision.
Exactly.
In a way.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I suppose we all feel it hard to make decisions in the first place. And I suppose, what are the telltale signs?
Yeah.
You know, of not
the
being...
The telltale signs of not being fit to make a decision or feeling bad about a decision?
Feeling badly about a decision. Not at peace.
Okay, not at peace.
It's, you know, usually there's a certain amount of frustration, overwhelm, anxious, depressed, you know, burnout, worried. The behaviours that often manifest, we get irritable maybe with our, you know, other half or complaining or frustrated or flat. And then social media obviously complicates the space because FOMO isn't just something for teenagers, it's for adults as well. So when we make an important decision, where do we go?
Mm-hmm.
We see somebody else's Insta feed and she looks amazing and she's just had her third baby and here am I struggling with just my single life.
Yeah.
So we compare ourselves.
Yeah, and comparison is a dangerous trap to fall into, but we do it all the time. It's so hard not to.
It's so hard not to. And we think maybe that person should make decisions for my life because they seem so happy in theirs.
They seem to have it together,
And look at me. So obviously, you know, it's helpful to ask ourselves, well, what's going on inside us? And, you know, we don't have a problem with smaller decisions, you know, choosing the chocolate dessert over banoffee, you know, because the consequences are pretty limited.
Yeah.
Although we can find those decisions hard.
Yeah.
But the bigger decisions are the ones we find harder.
Yes.
And they're the ones we lack peace with.
Yeah.
So we can be tempted to play it safe, you know, in other words, you know, not engage because we don't want to get it wrong. And Seth Godin, the famous author, says that's the lizard brain in us, which basically prevents us from taking risks with the choices that are put in front of us. Okay, so I like to kind of personify this little lizard brain, like the little, oh, don't do that now, you'll get into trouble.
Yeah,
don't be taking risks. You know, you know, you're not good enough. Don't do that. That's impulsive. That's rash. And basically, the little lizard brain sabotages our best opportunities and ruins our best chances to do great work.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's so, like a little inner critic too. There he is.
That's exactly what he is. Thank you, Siobhan. That's exactly what he is. Yeah. Another inner critic. So to move forward in life, we need to embrace the fact that if we're going to make decisions, we're necessarily moving in a direction and taking a risk. And we need to be happy to do that. Otherwise, we will be living, we won't be living our life. We won't be authoring our own life, self-authoring.
Yeah.
We'll actually be just staying it safe.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the misconceptions about decisions, you know, I think that also makes it difficult for us to make decisions. The first one is that, you know, hard choices are hard, not because we're ignorant or we're stupid.
Yeah.
It's because they're hard because the best choice isn't always obvious.
Yeah.
You know, because making decisions isn't a bit like science, you know?
There isn't a formula really that you can't follow.
No, because, and there isn't a black and white about it. You know, it's usually, it's not one and one is two. It's choices has a lot to do with the values. So, and that's very different to the world of science because our values, our commitments, our beliefs are in large part what determine the best decision for us. You know, whatever, it's honesty, is it generosity, is it kindness, is it courage, is it sincerity, whatever it is. They're not measurable in the same way as you might measure, you know, the purchase of a car.
Yeah.
Or a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know? And so the question at the center of the hard decision is what motivates you in your choices and why?
Yeah.
Is it love? Is it comfort? Is it honesty? Is it truth?
Mm-hmm.
Is it pragmatism?
Okay.
Is it purpose? Is it pleasure? Or is it meaning?
Yeah. So what's the motivating factor behind it?
Exactly. Yeah. And the choices is where we define ourselves. And this is the really exciting thing about choices.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when we think of decisions, we kind of, there's an inward groan. Oh God, I'm not able for it. You know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to go, look, the power to create a reason for yourself to do something makes you the kind of person you are.
Yeah.
And the kind of person you would be proud to be.
Mm.
So we can do something really remarkable. Because you're the only, you and I only, you know, we inhabit our space wherever we are right now, our job, our relationships, our commitments. And when we create reasons for ourselves, we become this kind of person rather than that kind of person.
Yeah.
And we turn into the person that we want to because we've chosen that as opposed to by default end up with a sort of not written, no one really.
Yeah.
And we wholeheartedly become that person. You know, we really become the author of our own lives and there's no best alternative. You know, and I'd encourage people not to look for reasons out there, although we do, in a sense, we might, if we feel we don't really have values or we're not sure what they are, yes, do look outside, read, etc., and talk to people who inspire you, you know. But the reasons should be inside. Look within.
Yeah.
Who do I want to be? You know, because if we don't exercise those hard choices about our values, we'll end up being what's called drifters, you know, allowing the world to write the story of your life.
Yeah.
Or, you know, allowing social media to do that.
Yeah.
Drifters are, you know, their motivating factors can be reward and punishment, you know, affirmation, you did a great job. Oh, then I'm still okay. I'm still up to it.
Okay.
Or the easiness option. It's easier to do this than to do that.
Mm.
And we can put our very selves behind our choice instead. Here's where I stand. Here's who I am. And so our choices aren't so much about agony or dread. They're really precious opportunities, you know, to celebrate what's special about being human.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes whenever we don't make a decision or we are worried about it or just going back there to that point you were saying about being drifters, I wonder sometimes, does it come from a place of fear?
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Or, you know, the lack of control of not, you know, like, because we always want to be able to kind of measure what the outcomes will be. But that fear then, it actually just ends up holding us back. You know,
exactly.
And then we don't become kind of the best version of ourselves or kind of really owning or shaping our own life in a sense.
No, I'd agree.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And it's interesting you say that because if you look at the root of the word decision, it comes from the Latin word, decidere, and it actually means to cut away from something and to align. So to align yourself or to commit to something, you need to cut away from something else.
From something else, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's very helpful. That's what decisive, and that's what's empowering about it. And that's why we find it hard.
Yeah.
Because we find it hard to step away from things. And also, I think as well, the fear of the consequences, you know, because when we make decisions, we're making them not just for ourselves oftentimes, but for other people, because it will have an impact on other people.
On other people as well, yeah.
So I think that is helpful. You know, that thing of fear, there's a very interesting quote, actually. It's from the book Midnight Library. And in it, it's basically Ravi, I think, is saying it to Nora. And he says, I don't think your problem was stage fright or wedding fright. You know, because she obviously didn't follow through in either of those things. She didn't follow through in her band. She didn't follow through in a wedding. I think your problem was life fright.
Life fright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says the only way to learn is to live.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
you have to make mistakes.
You do. Yeah. And I think we're just so afraid of, I've only got one life, so I want to get it right.
Mm.
Whereas YOLO.
Yeah.
You know, there's an element of YOLO in this. You know, you only live once, so.
Yeah.
You know what?
Life is for the alive.
Exactly. And the other nice thing is to think about the virtue, which obviously helps us make good decisions, is called prudence.
Mm.
Now, I know you don't like this word, Siobhan, because we talked about it.
Yes, the word prudence, I think sometimes it just can have, well, I do like the virtue. I think the virtue is necessary. But the word prudence, maybe it just needs like a marketing rebrand.
I think
I just... sometimes it can have negative connotations. When you think of prudence, you think of being kind of prude or somebody that's really prudent, like never makes a decision properly, or they only take the safest decision. But that's not actually what the virtue is about, really.
No, it's not actually, because it's about, it has got bad press.
And it's got bad press, yeah.
And prudish and prude. And
yes.
And even in the fruit, prune.
Yeah,
prune. None of these are.
Tastiest fruit.
Or even just, you know, its function. It doesn't sound very, you know, beautiful, exciting and awesome. So yes, it does need rebranding, but it is all about just, not just about the good you do, but the way you do it.
Yeah.
And the fact that basically prudence is like future-proofing. Mm. So if you're saying, I want to go and set up a company and I want to do this and all that, future-proofing is kind of, okay, have I got the funds? You want to make sure that it happens.
Yeah.
So prudence is somebody who goes, I want to be able to be here. I want to be able to live a good life. I want to be a great mom. I want to be a really good coworker.
Yeah.
So this decision, is it going to be getting me there?
Yeah.
And that's, and so I think it was, it was Aristotle called prudence the mother of all virtues, because your virtues can never be like little fragmented little pieces, you know, isolated from each other. They have to be united in the person that is you. In other words, they need to be at the function of you being the best, good, true, the best version of yourself.
Of yourself, yeah.
So, and I think it's interesting, the average person apparently makes, drum roll, 35,000 decisions a day.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Now, I'm not saying all those are majors, but at the same time, 35,000 is an awful lot.
That's
so
a lot.
We need a hell of a lot of prudence.
Pony Moses, yeah.
We do.
We do, yeah.
I don't know if I'll mention about Plato. Will I? Plato, he's a... Will I talk to you about Plato?
For it,
I should go for it. Well, Plato, I just think this is another image. If you're an image person listening into this, if you're thinking about making decisions, Plato decided, he compared the human capacity to make decisions like a charioteer. Okay, a charioteer with two horses.
Yeah.
And the charioteer is the human being who's got reason. You have to make, you are the one in charge.
Yeah.
And the two horses, one is black and one is white.
Mm-hmm.
The white one is all about glory, popularity, affirmation, reputation, look at me.
Yeah.
And then the black horse is all about pleasure, you know, money, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the charioteer has to be the one to, there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with sex. There's nothing wrong with rock and roll.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just in excess, or if they're undermining your freedom and, you know, context in the wrong context.
Yeah.
They're problematic. In the same way, there's nothing wrong with a bit of affirmation, but if affirmation is what you live for, or
then it's not good. Yeah. So an excess of it is no good. Yeah.
Exactly. So reason is all about sort of managing those horses that they work together.
Yeah. To kind of stop the,
So the charioteer is the person who's got the vision and the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's,
you're the
image.
Prudent. Yeah. You're going, no, we need to get there. We need to get to go in the right direction.
Yeah.
If white goes in a direction here, white horse, we're going off course.
Yeah.
The black horse. So they have to go very much directed and the harmony. So weighing things up, you know, making decisions, deliberating over things, not being impulsive, all that kind of stuff is really, really important. There's two other things I think are important in decision making that can really help. And also, if we're looking back on decisions we're not so sure about, is self-awareness and self-acceptance.
Okay.
Because self-awareness is knowing who you are in the sense of personally, you know, temperament, You know, are you logical? Are you spontaneous?
Yeah. What kind of person you are? What kind of things? Yeah. Affect you? Yeah.
Are you, you know, are you, would you find it hard? Maybe your spontaneity leads to impulsiveness sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe your logical approach leads you to really just get stuck.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, maybe you're not used to being proactive, you know, so call things for what they are. They're facts and not takes, as it were. You know, Daniel Goleman, of course, who's the father of the eight intelligences, talks about self-awareness, like that realistic self-confidence, that you understand your own strengths, your own limitations, and you operate from that competence, you know. And having that emotional insight, you know, understanding your feelings. Why am I angry? What makes you happy, angry, sad, or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
The acceptance piece is, I am who I am in my reality right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it could be my family life, my work life, my relationships, the good, the bad, the ugly. That's my starting point.
Yeah. That's what's actually happening in my life. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's not an excuse just to leave it at that.
Yeah.
It's your starting point. It's what you have to work with.
Mm.
And I think that's really, a really good thing. We're thinking about decision making.
Yeah.
You know,
sometimes you can fall into the kind of if only.
Exactly.
Like, oh, well, if only I had a bigger car, or if only, you know, diesel wasn't so expensive, or if only this kind of thing wasn't happening, or if only my children would just sit down for 5 minutes, or if only my coworker wasn't really, like, whatever, you know, then we would kind of be fit to make good decisions, and then we'd be able to, like, kind of own our life. But, you know, you have to work where you're at.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where you're at.
Yeah, no, and
bloom where you're planted.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and that's the key to happiness and flourishing, is just acceptance of self and acceptance of personal circumstances.
Yeah.
I think as well, Jane Austen's novel, you know, there's two great characters, there's loads of them, but I think there's two great characters which exemplify, you know, good decision making and not decision making, basically.
No decision making.
No, it's just, you know, just MIA, missing in action. One is Mr. Bennet, who obviously is a classic example, the father of Lizzie and the girls in Pride and Prejudice, and he just avoided decisions.
Yeah.
He just made fun of people. He retired to a study, he read, and he drank port wine. And he avoided life, basically, and he avoided responsibility.
Yes.
And he was a negligent father and a negligent husband. And when Lydia eloped, he said to his oldest daughter, Lizzie, "It will pass, Lizzie, sooner than it should. It will pass." In other words, it has nothing to do with me.
He kind of had a brief moment of awareness that, oh yeah, maybe I might have had something to do with that. But it'll pass.
But still nothing to do with me. Back into the study. Yeah. And then you have Mr. Knightley from Emma, who's obviously a very good decision maker. His values are clear. He's kind and he's humble. He was born into privilege, but he uses that to serve and to look out for others.
Yeah.
You know, and he decides not to engage with snobbery and superficiality.
Mm.
He lives according to those values. They direct his decisions. And so he's reliable. People could rely on him. There was an expectation about Mr. Knightley. Whereas poor old Emma is busy making decisions all over the place, everybody else, humiliating people, vain, flirtatious.
Yeah.
And she almost destroys Harriet's, you know,
future marriage. Yeah.
And the famous line from Mr. Knightley to Emma is, "Badly done, Emma.
Badly done.
So, they're great.
Yeah.
So as we go through life, we're going to come across people who are either Emma's, Mr. Knightley's, or Mr. Bennet's.
Mm.
And it's great to have people who, you know, are just good at making decisions, in the sense, you know, you value them because they're committed. Like, they're not afraid to go, "No, I won't be available. That won't work. Listen, I'll catch you again during the week."
Yeah.
I want to give you a really helpful example I read in the book Essentialism by McCone. And in it, he talks about, you know, he's been really, really busy business. You know, he's an entrepreneur. And he realizes in a lot of trips abroad, and he's talking to his wife and he's saying, "Look, I'm not going to spend much time with the kids as I need to or as I ought. They're all growing up very quickly." So they make the decision that he'll take one of the kids with him, one of the older kids, on one of his trips, you know, whenever he goes away and it's appropriate. So he takes his 10-year-old daughter and they're off somewhere, I can't remember, Barcelona. And they have a kind of a date day, you know, when he's not on business, and they're going to do all fun things like dine in a lovely restaurant, play with the fish. I've no idea.
Yeah, what one does in Barcelona.
What you do in Barcelona, what you do as a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, as he's sitting down to tuck into his dinner that evening with his daughter, next thing he catches the eye of this man who was basically in college with him. And when he was in Oxford, bearing in mind McCone is living in the States now.
Okay.
And he suddenly realizes the two of them get up and, oh my God, where have you been? Ronnie's amazing. Yeah. Oh, it's so good to see you. I can't believe it. Our stars have collided. Yeah. We are in Barcelona at the same weekend. Yeah. So it is, when are we going to catch up? And he's already thinking, oh my God, I could tweak this. And next thing, his little daughter's hand and little face is almost welling up with tears and thinking, there goes our date.
Oh no.
But what does he do? He turns around to his friend. He says, you have no idea how delighted I am to see you. Mm-hmm. I would so love to spend this time with you, but I have a prior commitment with my daughter.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm afraid I can't break that, but come on, let's touch base next week. Let's jump on a call together and let's catch up on the last 10 years.
Man. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I told that to an audience and I could just hear the intake of breath and the...
Oh, thank you. Because in a sense, it would have been so easy to dismiss that because we always kind of take the people that are closest to us for granted. But and I'm glad he kept up with his daddy-daughter date.
Well, she'll never forget that.
Of course she won't, yeah.
You know,
that's a great example for her there and then, yeah.
And it shows you how decisions are hard.
Decisions are hard, yeah.
Because you're not going to please everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can't please everyone, yeah.
So it's deciding who's most important to please right now and then how can I soften the blow at the other end?
Yeah.
You know, and
very good, yeah.
And how much that person will actually really, that friend of his is going to go, what a dad.
Mm.
In fact, that whole scenario probably said something to his friend, you know, what a nugget of wisdom and beautiful commitment there. So I don't want to spend too long, you know, but just to walk through briefly and we finish with this really is the elements of a good decision.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
so how do we know when we're making the best decision in any situation?
Exactly. Well, the first thing is we need the capacity to judge well and to weigh things up objectively and clearly.
Mm.
Okay. First of all, outlook. Let go of this kind of life or death outlook, you know.
Yeah.
Most hard decisions are rarely black and white. You will live to see another day.
Yeah.
You know, and it does mean you have to step away from something and commit to something else. Mm. So, by choosing one thing over the other, you will be missing out on something, and that's called maturity. Sorry, I say it to myself first.
Yeah.
More, you can't do everything, your mother would have said to you.
Yeah.
You need to decide.
Yeah.
You can't have both desserts. You have to pick one.
Pick one.
Okay.
Pick one.
And we gain so much more by choosing one that fits us.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's true, yeah.
Reflection is an important aspect of any decision, you know, because we need to be able to go over our previous life experience, our memories of life, and it's our openness to reality around us and our ability to learn from it that actually helps us to make decisions well.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no kind of quick fix. You know, you're not going to get a TED talk that goes, do this and you have perfect decisions.
And it'll all work out.
No, it's you need to do the reflecting on your life. The more we reflect on life and learn from our mistakes and those of others, the better we get at decision making.
And to make the decisions our own.
Exactly.
You know, when I was doing my PGCE, I won't name her. She might be a listener. You never know. Mm-hmm. But our teacher, one of the professors, she's an amazing woman. And she said that her one wish for us as teachers would be that we would become reflective practitioners. That has always stuck with me. That you would, at the end of every teaching day or every teaching week, that you would actually think, okay, what decisions did I make? Did I make the best ones? If I didn't, what could I do differently? So that you kind of can make it your own.
No.
To be reflective.
It's so helpful. And it's interesting as you say that, Siobhan, because I think to be reflective, you need the space to be reflective and you need to be calm and peaceful.
Yeah,
like I often say, you know, some parents in a school, I say to them, you know, the truth is that, you know, before you approach your teen, you need to be able to go, what space are you in?
Absolutely.
Because it can go real pear-shaped.
Oh, it can go pear-shaped
because
very quickly.
You're not, you're just had a stressful day in the office and it's not a good day. So in those, it's not easy to find those spaces to be calm and peaceful.
You have to be very intentional about it.
Yeah, you do. And because then you can think and you can look at the pros and cons and you can think, okay. And you almost, you know, take a nice cup of tea or something so that you kind of, because you need courage to face yourself.
Mm.
You know, Leonardo da Vinci said that the greatest courage is to face yourself.
To face yourself.
Because, you know, and that's, it helps us, you know, it's, you know, yeah, basically. I think as well, living in reality, you know, we've talked a bit about this earlier, you know, embracing your own situation, but knowing and presenting things as they are, knowing what ground you stand on, what's unclear, what's doubtful, you know, and it avoids us, you know, sometimes nothing feels nicer than the rush of a quick decision in the moment. Oh, come on, let's just do that, book those tickets. And then, okay, there is space for that in life, but usually you kind of need to give it a bit more time. And, you know, living in the reality means also our embracing our life choices, our relationships, our commitments in our decision making, because that's what gives us inner peace, you know. And that's part of who we are, you know. It's not a space of I wish I wasn't. No, this is who I've chosen to be. And again, that's where our core values come in. You know, they're like our compass, or they're like a lighthouse. You know, they guide us through life, or they light up the way. You do you can be a danger zone.
I must admit, it's a phrase I don't really like.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I suppose it's okay if it means you do you means you do your values.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it can be a bit of an excuse to do whatever you like. Whatever
you want. A bit kind of a license. But also, I think sometimes it can be a bit relative, because sometimes you do you isn't really the best for you, really. But anyway, that could be a whole other podcast.
It totally could. I suppose the core values here we're talking about are ones that we know that hold us accountable.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones you mentioned earlier. They're not like, you know, shifting sand or, you know. You know, they're ones, whether it's honesty, generosity, kindness, goodness, truth, all those kind of what we call things that transcend, you know. They're ones that we don't always live by, but that is the moment for truth telling and to ask for forgiveness. And that's human. And that's really important that we know that's normal. We don't suddenly say, no, in fact, I'll change my value because I can't live up to it. And those are moments where we just go, look, my better self really wasn't showing up there. So
what do I need to do here? Keep going, get up again.
Exactly. Yeah. I do think perfectionism has really creeped in all of this. And I'm going to just a nice spiritual anecdote that I heard recently and I thought I found it very helpful. I think it was the case of St. Catherine Laboure, who was getting visions of the Sacred Heart. And her confessor at the time, or her spiritual director, guide, said to her, the priest said, you know, he was kind of, it's not that he was dubious, but obviously it's not normal to have somebody having apparitions of the Sacred Heart.
So, well, you would ask a few questions.
You would, you'd go, did you sleep? How are you feeling? Do you tend to imagine things? Yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But in any event, he asked her to ask Jesus what was his last mortal sin.
What was his?
Yes,
what was his,
like, imagine. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So she did go and ask Jesus what his last mortal sin was. And he said, so what did he say? And he said, she said to him, she said, oh, Jesus said he couldn't remember. So I just like to use that in this context, because sometimes we think core values are like, you know, somebody with a stick over us. You told a big fat lie there. Truth is not your value. It is your value. It doesn't mean you always align to it.
Yeah.
Values are bigger than us. But God doesn't remember. We do. And I think we need to get better at letting go, you know, like little children. You know, let go of the past, not to worry so much about the future. You know, weighing the pros and cons, but ultimately looking at your values. And I think as well there is, you know, family time, you know, there's all little values that we have. And it does take effort to go, where am I aligning myself to that family time? Where am I aligning myself to that commitment? Where am I aligning myself in work to the people I work with? You know, which can be a challenge if you're really, really busy. And they're really, really busy. The other couple of things just to mention is taking advice. No one person has all the answers. We all have our limitations. So we need knowledge to make the right decision. We need clarity. Taking advice from the people we value, in the sense they're people of integrity.
Yeah, you know, people we trust.
Have moral lives, as it were. And I wouldn't take advice from more than three people, because otherwise you're kind of, need to make the decision.
You need to make the decision. And sometimes when you have a lot of opposing ideas, potentially, it can just lead to even more paralysis in making a decision. Yeah.
And so that's really it. And then just make the decision. Once you've seen what you need to do, just go and make the decision. I think we're, just to finish, the pitfalls with decision-making is when we maybe our less better selves come to the fore, like we're impulsive about a decision, or we're thoughtless. We don't think of people or circumstances, or we're inconstant, you know, or negligent, all those kind of things. But I think, and that's if we're reflecting back on decisions we've made that they don't sit well with us. Well, that's where the learning comes in.
Yeah.
The next time that crops up, I'll remember that.
Then you'll know,
Do celebrate a decision, you know, because it does, it is hard to make good decisions. And where we need to pivot, and I'll finish with this, is look at decisions we've made and maybe we need to change because our commitments have changed. You know, in making a decision is not just a new canvas every time. There's no swipe button. You know, there are certain commitments we've made, which mean that I made a decision at 25 is different now because I'm married with kids.
Yeah.
Or my husband isn't well, or somebody's unemployed, or somebody's having a bad time, or somebody is just, whatever it is. That's owning my life. There is nothing wrong with it. Reality, there's nothing wrong with reality. What's wrong is if we pretend another reality. Mm. And then letting go of the control sometimes in things. So there is a difference between goals and outcomes. Mm-hmm. Goals are things that aren't measurable. While outcomes are observable and measurable, but values don't change. So what do I mean by that is that we can't control goals or aims. We can only try, but we can't make them happen. And sometimes what happens to us in decision making is that we feel, I decided that I wanted to achieve this goal. Well, you may not achieve it. You may just do what you can to achieve it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's something, completing tasks brings great fulfillment. And so unfinished tasks can sometimes seem stressful.
Yeah.
In the same way, a decision that we've made sometimes didn't work out in the end because circumstances beyond our control.
Yeah.
That's no reason to have made a different decision.
Yeah. Or no reason to feel like a failure.
Exactly.
Really. Yeah.
If you've made the right decision there. So, we'll always feel responsible for our decisions, and that's a good thing. We'll always learn from our decisions, you know, and we need to embrace all the consequences of our decisions. We make a choice. It's good to walk through those consequences as we're making a decision. We will suffer in our decisions, after our decisions, but then we need to be able to shut it down and go, that's decided, that's done and dusted.
That's it. Move on.
And move on. And there's a great beauty in it, you know, do your part just to finish, I suppose, and let God do the rest, you know, from a spiritual space. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I was listening to somebody talk about Cardinal Sarah, the great African cardinal. And this gentleman said that whenever he met him, he never seemed concerned about completing tasks. And I don't mean he didn't get stuff done. Clearly he does.
Yeah, he does get stuff done. But
he just didn't worry about the outcome.
Yeah.
And he did ask him once about that. And he said, well, God doesn't ask me to succeed. He asks me to love.
Mm.
And I think that's really helpful when we're making decisions is, look, all I can do is my best.
Yeah.
God will do the rest. All I can do is love. And I think that gives us the freedom to be able to go, well, I made that decision. Now let's move on.
Yeah.
And get on with living our life.
Yeah. Maura, that's great. Thank you so much. And I'm sure I find that really helpful, really enjoyable. And I know our listeners will as well. So great. Thank you so much.
Not at all.
And thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll see you again.